we are pleased to have Jennifer Pokal-Demas joining us today from Plex Systems. She's got some really great stories to share, and she's going to talk about how we can dive into success and account strategy. So we're going to hope to have some time for Q&A at the end. We may be able to squeeze in a couple minutes, so if you have some questions, save them for the end for Jennifer. So Jennifer, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for being here. I'm Jen Pokal-Demas, as was just mentioned, and I'm going to spend the next half an hour talking about how Plex has gone all in on account-based everything. So we've been account-based for about 4 years, as long as I've been there. That's actually why I was brought there, for one of the reasons I was there. And I want to talk to you about what that means to us and what our results have been. And I'd love to be able to answer any of your questions as they come up, too. So I'm definitely going to try and save time at the end to answer your questions, but I'm going to walk you through our process for how we select our target account list and then how we implement target account marketing and sales and the technologies that we use and how we measure our success. So I'll start by telling you guys a little bit about Plex itself. Plex, we are the manufacturing cloud. So we sell an ERP cloud-based solution to manufacturers. And its differentiation in the marketplace is that it is cloud-based, but also it is a solution that was built specifically for the shop floor, and it also does all of the things that other ERP systems do, like run your financials and all those other things. But most ERP systems are built for the top floor. And the shop floor, what we really do is we empower those people who are on the floor building products to bring their products to market, to share information with each other in real time. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about our addressable market here, because I think it introduces some of the complexities of my business and helps you understand some of the challenges that we face in terms of sales and marketing and demand creation. So first of all, we have a selling team that is an SMB-focused team, and we have an enterprise-focused team. And those businesses are very different from each other. I'm sure many of you have the same dichotomy. But we have a shorter selling cycle. You can close a deal within a year. You can be introduced into a deal and close that deal within a year if you're an SMB, if you're in one of those smaller deal sizes, because usually it might be one location or a few locations that you're selling to, and it might be a family-run plant. For example, it might be an executive who owns the company and his son who runs operations who are making those choices. Those are our transactional deals. Those are the ones that are quicker for us because it might still involve a board conversation. It's still an enormous investment for that company, but it's fewer decision makers. Whereas with enterprise, when we're talking about multiple locations, multiple companies, we're talking about many languages, many different requirements that are going to happen. I think that I'm being conservative when I listed here that there are 8+ buyers. It's a very complex, very long deal cycle, and it's much larger than that. We do many multi-million dollar deals in the enterprise space. Those deals can be extremely long, and the sale is very traditional and relationship-based. So it's an interesting selling dichotomy that we have that we're addressing. And one thing that I didn't mention in terms of the very manufacturers themselves, we sell to manufacturers who produce discrete products like the things that go into cars, the springs under the seats, the stitching in the upholstery, those kinds of things, those kinds of factories are discrete manufacturers. We also sell to process manufacturers. And process manufacturers, some of our customers make beer, some of them make chocolate, and some of them make rum and oil and gas, all kinds of other process. Those are the things where you put the ingredients in and you can't take them apart again in process manufacturing. And those manufacturers speak entirely different languages. So if I put marketing for a discrete manufacturer in front of a process manufacturer, they're going to leave. They won't speak to me anymore. So those are some of the complexities with which I deal. I just wanted you to understand that situation as I start to talk about our market. So we went to account-based marketing, as I said, 4 years ago. And that was because there was not a strong connection between the activities that were happening in the marketing organization and those that were happening in the selling organization. We were doing some marketing, and they were doing some selling. And sometimes we would throw some leads over there, but there really wasn't a connection. There was very light adoption, even for the transactional selling system, which is Salesforce. We use Salesforce, but the sales leader who had preceded preceded us had basically turned it on and said, here's Salesforce, use it if you want to. So that was the situation that I walked into, yeah. So you can imagine that they used it really well. So what I did when I got there was build a connected system. So we now have, and I did put in here a money slide for you guys. I know you're gonna want it, but I do have a tech stack slide in here so I can show you what we're using. But I did build a system. We redid our website on world-class web technologies. We are using Eloqua, we are using Salesforce, so we're using all of the bones that you need to enable marketing and sales. But we also built a process, more importantly, that connects the activities of those functions. So we're all rowing in the same direction and working toward the same goal. So the great thing about how to derive an account-based list for us is that it's an aligned activity, that it isn't just a marketing activity to come up with a target account list. It's also not just a marketing and sales activity. It's a marketing, sales, and strategy. So it's actually our strategy organization is part of that conversation with us. And it's actually a conversation that we spend a tremendous amount of time even talking to our board about the derivation of this list, because we talk about our addressable market. And when we talk about our addressable market with your investors, we're actually talking to them about real accounts that we really want to sell into, that we know how big they are, we know how much revenue they have, we know how much revenue they would be to us if we closed those deals. And so this is a very aligned conversation throughout all of the go-to-market functions at Plex. So it's a combined conversation that we have once a year. We start the addressable market considerations in the beginning part of Q4. We're on a calendar year. So we roll out the new target market in the beginning of the year. That is if we don't decide to make a mid-year adjustment, which we did last year. I'll talk you guys through that too. So this is a little bit of an example about how our approach to our addressable market has changed over the last couple of years. It's hard to understand without knowing the details here, but I'm just gonna walk you through a story. At the very beginning when I got here in 2014, which is the three boxes you don't see, the year that you don't see, we literally already sold to automotive. And so we thought, hey, if we sold to automotive, a lot of automotive manufacturers also provide products to aerospace and defense. So we should also sell to aerospace and defense. It was that simple, and we said we sell to the food and beverage industry because we had customers. We did a very simple derivation of a target account list that year. And so it was, I don't know how many of you do this, but we looked at our install base of customers, and we said, well, this is what they look like. And then we built up a list based on NAICS code, actually, that looked like that. We threw out the outlier customers that were difficult to manage and weren't a perfect fit for us, and we built this addressable market. So the food and beverage industry all by itself, it dwarfs automotive and aerospace. It's enormous. And the first year that we created our target account list, we had the entire food and beverage industry in our addressable market. This is just, I guess the lesson to tell you here is that we've gotten better at this every year, we've gotten smarter, and as we've gotten smarter, our target account list has gotten smaller. So if I were to put numbers next to or underneath each of these years, and you can't even see 2014, 2014 was an enormous addressable market. We were so excited, and we could create a tremendous amount of demand in those accounts. We were great at creating awareness because people didn't know about Plex then. We got them to know about us, we spent our dollars and attention there. The problem is that we found that we couldn't close some of those deals. And that was because we had much too broadly defined our addressable market. And so we've gotten smarter and smarter and smarter every year, and I'm gonna jump ahead to 2017 and let you know that the additional color that we added into our market definition this year was we layered on product fit. So I'm gonna jump forward a slide to show you. What we did was we looked at each of the sub-segments in our market, and then we layered on product fit. We said, how well does our product match this particular sub-segment? And so we had to work with the product management team, and again with strategy and product marketing to make those determinations. But that's where you can see the red, yellow, and green colors there. That's about product fit. So we're able to say, this is our market, and these are the places where our product is a tremendous fit and where the sales should have the least friction. And then the other parts of the market, the ones in yellow or the ones in red, are where the product might be a good fit for some, but not all of that sub-vertical. And in the cases of red, maybe we shouldn't be in some of those conversations. That's within our addressed market that we defined. So you can see that we've just gotten better and better and better at making our addressable market small so that we can be focused and be successful. And these, obviously, these have numbers associated to them, and that's how we knew that we could have appropriate coverage for pipeline and for bookings in our targets for the year. So what do we do once we've determined this list? We come up with these accounts. We have them in Salesforce. We determine the accounts and pull in all of their firmographics. We use a bunch of different data sources, which you'll see in my final, in one of my last slides. But we pull all that data into Salesforce, and then we weight the accounts. So based on their product fit and based on a bunch of different criteria, we decide how important each one of those accounts are. And we actually create sales and marketing territories that are equally weighted on sweet spots. So actually, if I go back one slide real quickly, those circles that you see are what we have defined as our sweet spot. So for process manufacturing, it's that bottom circle down there. And for discrete manufacturing, it's automotive, fabricated metals, and secondary metals. And that's where we know we're going to have the least friction in a deal, where our product is the very best fit. And so we wanted to make sure that as we created territories for sales and territories for my lead gen team, that we did that in an equal fashion. So we created sweet spot accounts, and those accounts have a heavier weight in Salesforce. So when we go forward and we set these territories, you'll see in another slide here, this is drilling into one of the territories. We have three different kinds of accounts: investment accounts, sweet spot accounts, which are those ones I just mentioned, and then general target accounts. And we determine equal territories on a given team. So enterprise territories are equal to each other, and SMB territories are equal to each other, based on these account weighting criteria, which take into account not only firmographics, not only the revenue and the size and all that kind of good stuff, but also the product fit with our organization. So we feel like we get it down to a list where we have a really great chance of having a successful selling conversation, and we know that we've attributed those accounts equally amongst all of the people who are going to be selling and marketing. So this is just a quick summary for you before we move forward. For us, when we come up with named account territories, we are confident as an organization that we can meet our targets for the year, both our bookings targets and our pipeline targets, and that we can create equally weighted patches for each of our AEs, so they have equal ability to exceed their targets in a year, and that goes for the lead gen team as well. And then it allows us, of course, as all things account-based do, allows us to focus our energy and attention only on those accounts that we know are most likely to convert to customers. So what I did this year that's new is I restructured the team so that we are aligned. This is my integrated programs team. I didn't mention that to you guys. I should have done that. Sorry, but I'm responsible for the integrated programs team at Plex, which includes operations, but is the part of the organization that is responsible for generating about 80% of the pipeline for the selling organization. And so what we did was we restructured our team this year so that we are structured and focused based on buying stage. So we have what we call a tofu team, that's the top of funnel team, and we have MIFU, that's mid funnel, and then we couldn't come up with a cute acronym, so we have a customer team. So basically what we do is in our database, even though we are selling to a discrete list of accounts, those of you who were here earlier in the day and you heard John Miller talk about his five things that he would do, his first one was to make sure that you have the proper contact coverage for your target accounts. We definitely do that. We have in our ops team, there is actually a whole person who spends their time making sure that we have the right titles and names and that they're current in our database, but that means that a considerable amount of our database is purchased. It's an acquired database. So we have a lot of unengaged contacts, people who have never shown any sign of life for us. They've never visited our website. We don't know if they even know who we are. And so the tofu team, its primary responsibility is to go off-site, go out into the internet, and create a sense of awareness in those prospects so that they will know who Plex is and that they will understand what Plex does so that someday when they have a business problem, that Plex will be in their consideration set. So the job of the tofu team is to create, from unengaged contacts, engagement, and from engaged contacts to create inquiries, which I know everybody, that's the holy grail for all marketers. And then at the inquiry point, it hands off to the MIFU team. So the MIFU team is responsible for converting those inquiries into MQLs, and then they also focus on in-pipeline deals, on converting deals to close, and we call those velocity programs. So we run inquiry-focused programs and pipeline-focused programs, and then we hand off to the customer team who manages customer marketing. And all of those teams manage their own waterfalls. We manage our own, I'll show you the waterfall in just a minute. Here's the waterfall. So I added a couple of layers on top of the traditional serious decisions waterfall. We actually start our waterfall with a thing called engagement. So we're tracking in Salesforce and in Eloqua when accounts and particular contacts visit our website. And we also count when they engage with emails, even if they haven't filled out a form yet. So that begins to be our very earliest stage of engagement. We also look for social engagement, and we track those things. So we can see when there are signs of life in an account before they've even filled out an inquiry. And that gives fodder to that top of funnel team. It also helps the BDRs, that's our business development team, the lead gen folks, when they're doing outbound, if they don't have enough developed, warm, inquiries that they're working with, they can use those early signals of intent. And I'm gonna show you a bunch of other web signals that we look for that help us to reach out to customers who might be early in a buying conversation. And we divide our spend 50-50 between tofu and mifu, but we divide it between each of those five populations that I showed you on the last slide, so we can actually see dollar for dollar. If I have an extra dollar to invest, where would I put it and what would it yield? I can tell that because of how I'm measuring my spend and my output. I just wanted to have a quick slide. I think that everyone in this room is probably well acquainted with what an MQL is, but for me, an MQL, it becomes a pretty simple thing, although beautiful, when you have a target account list that you're 100% committed to. Because it just means it's the right account, we already know that, and it's the right person at that account, meaning an influencer or a decision maker. Now I will tell you that we have this year changed that so that we say it's the right person at an account. If they perceive a business problem and they think Plex might be able to help them with it and they want to meet with us, that's the right person. Even if it's someone who doesn't have a title that would suggest that they're a buyer or an influencer, that's okay, because as I had described to you before, it's a very long sales cycle, and it's the job of marketing and sales to meet as many people as we can in those accounts and to create those relationships that are going to take a long time to come to fruition. And so what we do in addition to MQL is we have an MQL rating. That's a red, yellow, or green, and it's different if you're enterprise or if you're SMB. But the rating is, the rating is our best determination of is this a currently selling opportunity, or is this an introduction that I'm making to you that may someday turn into something else, but maybe not this minute. It's just our guess. And so what we're doing, we just started this in February, so I'll be happy to report back later to let you know how well those things convert. I'm curious to see from the marketing source demand, how do reds convert to wins versus greens converting to wins and that kind of thing. I'll be able to see that over time. I sort of did that proactively thinking, when we loosen the reins on the MQL criteria, I know inevitably sales is gonna come to me and say, you're handing over a bunch of garbage. And so I came up with the idea of the rating in order to sort of not thwart that, but to say, look, we've agreed that this is what an MQL is, and some of them have more immediate value than others. They're all valuable, but let's see how these things convert over time. So we're doing that this year newly. We also implemented the Challenger selling model with the sales team last year. It's been really successful. We've developed a couple of commercial insights that the field is very successfully delivering. This is a CEB slide. I think many of you saw a presentation earlier today, and you may have seen this very symbol. But basically the idea of Challenger is that you go through this process of sparking an idea, introducing a new approach to it, and then confronting the status quo with your prospects to say, like, are you really okay that you're only getting whatever your current returns are for this when you know that it's possible to do things in a certain way. We decided to implement the Challenger methodology into our messaging and marketing campaigns this year. And so what we do, this is that 57% of the time that marketers are the people talking with prospects before they come engage with us. What we're doing when we run our campaigns is we are using that same spark, introduce, and confront methodology in the language within our campaigns. So as we move a relationship through from unengaged to in pipeline, we've already gone through a mini Challenger cycle before it gets to the salesperson. Then when the salespeople get it, they're then running Challenger Insights. So it's a familiar conversation. We're creating, as you heard this morning, an ongoing story. We're being very respectful of the conversation that has preceded what's going on with our prospects. So this is terrible, I apologize. It's not meant for you to look at it in any depth, but I wanted to give you a sense of how we structure the message to make sure we're delivering on point. We work with the product marketing team, and they are our CEB experts, but we work with them to define a tofu and a mifu message map for each of our different campaigns. So as you can imagine, a tofu message map, if I'm talking about something in manufacturing, it might start from something way not about Plex at all, the Internet of Things, or wearable technologies, or quality in manufacturing, something you know, kind of airy-fairy and out there that might get your opinion while you're out there. It might just catch your eye. And then as you begin to engage with our content, it gets a lot more specific. So the MIFU stuff, you can see, it'll go, if it starts off talking about quality, it'll go down to error-proofing, or it'll go down to APQP, which is, I'm sure it's something that nobody in this room knows or cares about, but if you were a manufacturer, you would. And we take that direction from product marketing so that we make sure we're creating an ongoing conversation with our prospects. So now I'm gonna get to talk to you about the cool technologies that we use to enable this. One of the technologies that we're using very heavily is Triblio, and we use Triblio for content targeting, and we also use it for a bunch of web analytics and some reporting to our lead gen and sales team. So I'll talk to you a little bit about that now. But we do four different kinds of content targeting. The first one that I'll talk about is industry targeting. So this is an automotive. This is a page that you would see if you came and you were from the automotive industry. This is what our homepage would look like. And if you had already engaged with some quality content, then you would see this as your homepage. And we had really high conversions with that piece of content below. So we're actually being respectful of what have you done before and who are you, and we're showing you content that we believe will be relevant to you given where you are, or given who you are in this particular case. As I mentioned, we also sell to food and beverage. So here's a food and beverage page that you would land on if you were coming from somewhere else and you were from that process industry. In addition to industry targeting, we also have geographic-specific targeting. So I sell to all of North America, and that means that I have a Spanish language site, which, there you go, there's the homepage if you're coming from Mexico. And I also have, anyone who's selling to Canada right now knows about the lovely Canadian spam laws and all that fun stuff. So if you're a Canadian visitor and you come to my website, I ask for permission to communicate with you. So based on where you are coming from, I'm serving you different content. And I showed you on the page before this, based on what kind of company you're coming from, I'm serving you different content. And the other kind of content targeting that we do is based on sales stage. So if you're a customer right now, I'm actually promoting our user conference, which is coming up in April, and I'm inviting you and showing you the agenda. If you are a pipeline account and you are in a selling conversation with you, I am showing you content that is relevant to the kinds of conversations you've had with your selling agent. So I'm being respectful, again, with where you are in your buying process and your awareness of Plex. The other kinds of campaigns that we run, they're campaign-related content. So we ran a connected manufacturing program all of last year, and we ran people through, we brought a bunch of content together into a big page called a content hub, where we brought all of the information together and made it really easy for people who are coming in through that campaign to find the information that might be helpful to them. And then we do this great advertising, which is if you're an inquiry and you haven't yet converted to an MQL, we will chase you around the internet and show you a bunch of ads to remind you that we're out there and try and get you to come back. So this is an example of just the tofu campaign structure. It's much more complex when you layer in the MIFU. And last year we had a lot of bumping into each other until we were really clear about unengaged, engaged, inquiry. When we got really clean about that, we're never marketing to the same people, because there are different populations of people. So this is an example of a quarterly structure that we might have for our different industries and the different tactics. I'm using the same tactics you guys are. There's not really that much new and exciting. We're trying lots of new and exciting stuff, but it's the method that you use, the combination of those activities, and those preferences change all the time too, so you have to be testing and changing all the time what you're running. So here I wanted to show you some of what has happened as a result of our focus. So this is a really interesting story, and I love that we measure our output this way. We measure two key performance indicators about the web. One of them is one that you probably all use too, which is how many unique web visits do you have? And that's kind of interesting, but it doesn't really tell the whole story. Because we've been account-based for so long, we also show this stat, which is how many target account visits have happened in a given quarter. And as you can see, I don't know if you, I'll break it down for you. In December, we realized that we had a bunch of sort of garbagey target garbagey web traffic sources. I don't know if you guys all have Netflix or Roku or anything like that, but there's a company called Plex that's not me. And is the bane of my existence. And so we get a lot of garbage traffic of people coming and saying, my Plex thing doesn't work. And I'm like, I cannot help you. I don't sell that Plex thing that you are talking about. They don't have phone-based support either, so it's super fun for my lead gen team. But anyway, what we did was we were able to isolate the sources of web traffic that created that crappy Plex, the other Plex traffic for me, and we stopped it. So what we actually had happen in December, we had a decrease in year-over-year web traffic, which if you were just paying attention to web visits, you would think, that sounds bad. But at the same time, I had an increase of target account visits year-over-year. So I had less web visits, but more from the accounts that I cared about. So that's an awesome story, and I can only tell that story because I'm measuring the account visits, the target account visits that are coming in addition to those regular web visits that are coming. It's important to be able to talk about, when you're talking about accounts, which of those accounts are coming. Are they the right ones? Are you getting more of the ones you care about? And I just threw this slide in at the end. This is a dashboard that we use to be accountable to the whole marketing organization and to our board of directors to tell them that we're all rowing in the same direction, and some of these KPIs are the very things I just mentioned to you. And then here's the money shot, I guess, which is, oh, there is no money shot? That's terrible. Well, I lied to you. I have a tech stack slide that is not in this deck, but I will somehow get it to you guys through the conference. What I will tell you, and I'm happy to answer questions because we have a couple minutes left, it looks like. We use Triblio for that account targeting that I was talking about. We use it for advertising. We use it for that content targeting and our analytics. The one thing I didn't mention that we also use Triblio for is every week we send a report to our lead gen reps to say, of your territory, these are the top 20 accounts that were on the website last week. So again, that's an early signal of intent. They haven't filled out a form. But you can see how many people were there, you can see what pages they were on, and you can see that there's something going on at XYZ company. So if you're a lead gen person worth your salt, you're gonna check those things out and figure it out. And we also just, I think it's starting this Monday, we have a very focused enterprise sales territories this year, very, very small territories for the reps in order for them to stay focused. And we are sending the sales reps every Monday the same kinds of reports for their target territories to let them know which of their accounts are all over the web too. And that's a huge benefit for them. We're also using, I think I said, Eloqua. We're using Salesforce.com. We use a tremendous number of data sources. I'm happy to talk to anybody about any of the other solutions that are out there. We use Adobe AEM, and we use Google Analytics for the rest of to build out the rest of our stack. So we have some time if anyone wants to ask questions. Well, the answer to my question is not going to be satisfying for you because it was just happenstance, but there was no sales leader, so I jammed it in. Like, there was no if, and, or but about it. I was told to go put it, and everybody had to do it. So that was the good news. The thing I will tell you is there's something really helpful to sales when you can differentiate between the things that marketing is good at doing and the things that sales is good at doing and free them up to do the things that they are good at doing. There's things that we are much more effective and efficient at doing, and there's things that they are not good at doing. I had one of my sales reps, I will never let him live it down, sent out a direct mail piece with a Band-Aid taped onto the piece of paper, like to fix your ERP, and I was like, God, no, don't do that. I will never let him live that down, but that's not his job. That's not why he's hired. And that's my job. So what we do is when we give them tools and tricks, we're just really clear about who's doing what to whom. And we're clear about the things where we add more value and where they add more value. I can't do their job through marketing, and they shouldn't try and do mine through sales. So, for example, we have Eloqua Engage that we have rolled out to both the lead gen team and the reps. We create templates for them so they're not creating crappy email messages. And we also have a governor on it so they can't send it to too many people, because otherwise they're going to go ahead and send out email blasts that are untracked. So it's kind of a, it becomes not a negotiation, but sort of a conversation about what are you better at, what am I better at? And then we just make sure we're all coordinated. Also, we take direction from the field. We have a field marketing series that we're planning, and we're doing that with data that we have about where those events should be held, but we work with sales, and they are bought in, and they are a critical part of running that program. Same thing with our own outbound calling is sales directed. They tell us where to focus our energy. So we're a team. Mm-hmm. I think I saw a question over here, too. It's a great question. When I was showing you the five boxes, those are people. But we are actually very interested in the idea of a marketing qualified account. And we do those, the things that I did talk to you about that are account triggers are the ones that are like website visits. We track those based on the account, not based on, we also track them based on the person. But we talk about when an account has become aware of us because that account has now showed up. So it sort of depends in which context you're speaking, but we keep track of both. Mm-hmm. It sounded really fancy when I said it. Now I'm going to tell you something and you're going to be like, wow. Okay, when I was looking at how to restructure this team, I met with a bunch of people who are very good at organizational design. And when I explained to them the complexity of my market with verticalized interests and also with buyer's journey interests, how was I going to structure this message and how was I going to structure the team? And it was hilarious because the people who know said, oh, you need a person in charge of this and a person in charge of this. And I was like, I don't have that many people. Like, that's more people than I have. So we're a growing company. We're a growth stage startup. We're $100 million in revenue right now. The whole marketing team is about 60-something people. I've got 35, 40, something like that on my team. That includes the lead gen team. It's a small and mighty team. So we actually do a bunch of sort of non-traditional divvying up of responsibilities. There's actually a lot of this responsibility that's owned by our web team. Because it's part of integrated programs, we can all stay really well aligned. But we probably have, if I, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, less than 10 people who are doing those marketing programs. And that's actually, that's not even including the people who are in product marketing who drive our message, right? So those people aren't on my team, but we can't do our job without them.
Okay, I think we're out of time for questions, but we are going to have a little break in between, so maybe Jennifer, if you can stick around. And okay, great. Thank you, Jennifer. That was fantastic. So we have a couple minutes to stretch our legs.